Welcome back, and joining us now is Eric Peters at ericpetersauto.com, and it's always a pleasure to have Eric on. Did I get that right? Is it auto or autos?
Which autos is plural.
Plural, okay.
Yep.
Eric Peters Autos, plural.com. He talks about mobility and liberty, and those are a couple of things that we really can't live without, and it's always enjoy Eric Peters' style of writing. It's very engaging, and he's got a lot of memes that he intersperses through, but I love his insights. What's up, Eric? What's on your plate?
Well, let's see. Where do we even begin? How about with devolution? That's what I've been preoccupying myself in the last couple of days. Are you familiar with that?
What is devolution? No, I'm not.
Okay. It is this theory that has been circulating underground amongst the hardcore Trump people that maintains that Trump is actually still the president. Uh-huh. And in control of an operation headed by the military with Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, being the guy who is sort of the second in command lieutenant of Trump. And they're doing all of everything that's been going on for the past going on 4 years has been part of this operation to expose the black hats. That's what they call them. And the white hats.
Mark Milley, of all people that they would pick to be their guy, Mark Milley, come on. It's so unbelievable. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and they say that that's the evidence that the operation is going on, because after all, Trump appointed Mark Milley, and look, Mark Milley's still there. He hasn't been removed. And so essentially, Biden is literally sort of a fictitious front. He's not really in charge of anything. It's all just a gigantic show for our benefit. And everything's going to be set aright shortly when the orange man triumphantly returns with trumpets and Jesus' hand on his shoulder as he re-enters the White House come January.
Oh, and a lot of that is, you talk about with Jesus' hand on his shoulder. A lot of that is coming from these faux Christians. Julie Green, and all these people making all these false prophecies, and they were kept saying, well, he's not leaving. Trump's not leaving. And then when he was gone, well, he'll be coming back. He'll be back.
One of my oldest friends, we've known each other since we were kids, and we used to laugh at the way Clinton manipulated Christians, Bill Clinton, by clutching that oversized Bible with the gold leaf, Clinton, oh, look, he really, he's a good man. And we would ridicule people who bought into that. But now somehow these same people see Trump parroting Christian sounds and phrases. And they say, look, he's really the reincarnation of Cyrus. That's another thing that they say.
Oh, yeah.
That he's Cyrus. And they've got coins with his profile. juxtaposed with Cyrus. It's as or more insane on the right as all of the stuff that the insanity that we've been dealing with on the left, with regard to all of the sickness kabuki and the masks and everything else. They're immune to facts. They're immune to reason. They just have this sort of this messianic religious belief in their secular savior with the spray tan.
It really is concerning. As a Christian, I hate to see the ignorance of Christianity, the idolatry. I hate to see the ignorance of politics as well, because these people really don't understand how things work. When you talk to them and you say, he locked us all down. He did no, he didn't do it. It was the bad Democrat governors. Yep. And it's like, the Republican governors were just as bad, and it was Trump was paying them to do that. It's absolutely insane. But, when you're talking about all this stuff, we've got arrests that are going on and everything, and somebody sent me an email that was talking about it. I forget the guy's name. I had it, and I was trying to find it here. I've had it to talk about it this week. I can't remember the guy's name offhand. But he's putting out this stuff, and he's a new guy. It's not Steve Pachinik this time, but it's somebody else who has been on the military side of intelligence, just like Steve Pachinik, just like Mike Flynn and all the rest of this stuff. And he is he's telling everybody that there's arrests that are going on, like you were just saying. And that's exactly what Steve Pachinik did with a sting 2 days after the election. He said, we got 20,000 National Guard. They're out there right now. They're arresting people. And I said, there's absolutely no way that that's possible. You can't do that without people noticing that, number one. Number two, he had this story about how they had set up and blockchain watermarked the ballots. He just threw every buzzword that he could put in there. And so I started opposing that. That's what got me fired, was for opposing that, because that was laying the foundation for Alex's Stop the Steal scam, where he ripped people off for unbelievable amounts of money, and also for Trump's, Save America thing. And Roger Stone said, this is going to be great. Where it's going to be like falling off a log to make money. And it was. It was unbelievable how they ripped off their own people and then sent them to January the 6th in the false hope that they could actually do something. And then abandoned these people. Trump said, I'll meet you there. He walked away. Alex was there. He walked away. He went to the other side of town. Nothing ever was done to help any of these people. They left them twisting in the wind. Will they never learn? It's just amazing.
Apparently not. And now I find myself in the very odd position, on the one hand, of having been excommunicated by people who were on the left sort of during the pandemic, not playing along with that nonsense. But now, people that I've been friends with for many years on the right are casting a suspicious eye at me because I don't buy into all of this Trump stuff and don't worship the orange man. And increasingly, I'm really concerned that they're actually going to let him win.
Oh, yeah.
And then tank the economy. And then they're going to blame every patriarchal, anti-trans, misogynistic white male that they can find who are all threats to our democracy.
Yeah, they'll come for that Kansas City field goal kicker and they'll burn him in effigy. It is. But seriously, it is dangerous because, Hillary, and I've said this when it was all happening in 2020 and when we had the election in 2020, I said, you would have never ever heard anybody saying that Hillary was really on our side with all this stuff, right? And it was unnecessary to have Hillary because all the left really wanted this stuff. They love to be given orders and they love to give orders. They just want to find their little niche in the pecking order and, they can bully people that are underneath them and they love that kind of stuff. And so you didn't need to have Hillary in there to pull this stuff off, but you had Trump in there. And I said, Trump did everything the globalists did at the same time they were doing it. As a matter of fact, he went further. He provided the money for all of this stuff for both the Democrats and Republicans. He provided the money for Pfizer and Moderna to get this stuff and to poison the world. He provided all that stuff. And you had people like Alex saying, well, it's 4D chess. And Alex was actually telling people, you can take the Trump vaccine. It's different than the Gates vaccine. It's kind of like sugar water. Yeah, that's what it is. It's like sugar water, just making this stuff up. And so, it was more dangerous to have Trump there. They didn't get everybody, but they got more people by having Trump there because they knew they already had the left. But here's the thing that concerns me, Eric, and that is when we're coming up here, what is the other distinguishing thing that we see as you talked about the insanity of the people on the right? Just like the insanity of the people on the left. I say, the people on the left, they got Trump derangement syndrome. They can't stand this guy personally. They hate his very essence, right? But the people on the right, they're operating under the strong delusion. They've created this figure in their own imagination that is nothing at all what Donald Trump is. And so you got the people on the left who are deranged, the people on the right who are delusional. But one thing they both share, and that is they believe that everything needs to be and can be fixed by the right person in Washington. And so they're going to fight over that. We could have a civil war over the Oval Office very easily. Whichever side doesn't get its way. And this, all of this stuff is really setting us up for a civil war for whoever doesn't get their way because they think that all the solutions are in Washington. The only way they're going to get away from a civil war is to convince people that Washington is not where the solution is. The solution is at the local level. The solution is ground up, and it's not from top down.
Yeah, and it's to purge somehow this authoritarian reflex that has somehow embedded itself in the American psyche on the left and the right.
Yes.
It's afraid to be told what to do and to tell people what to do, and it afflicts both sides equally.
That's right, yeah. That's the thing that disturbs me so much, how I've said the Democrats of my youth have become the communists of my youth, and the Republicans have become the Democrats of my youth, and it's just to see the whole country slipping into this authoritarian idolatry that we got to have this leader who's going to save us. And we see elements of it with Elon Musk as well. They think Elon Musk is going to save them as well. He's on our side. He single-handedly saved free speech. And look at the price that he paid, and all the rest of this stuff. I talked about it yesterday, Eric. It's kind of interesting. We had this totally ridiculous and absurd idea being sold by the Democrats that Trump was supporting this video that was out there that talked about a unified Reich. right?
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't even find that when I looked at it. I had to look at a still frame that somebody had grabbed and then circled it in red. And it was a template that somebody had used. And it wasn't the Trump administration. It was totally bogus. But they sat there for 2 days, you know, debating and wringing their hands over whether or not Trump is trying to establish a Fourth Reich or something like that. And then with Trump, they do the same thing with this boilerplate order from the FBI to search Mar-a-Lago and use deadly force if necessary. They never care about deadly force being used against you and I or the general public, right? They don't pay any attention to the fact that this is actually a boilerplate thing that is there and that it needs to be shut down. You know, the FBI needs to be, as Steve Friend, I've interviewed him, he's a whistleblower, who refused to do a raid that could be lethal against peaceful January the Sixers. And so, you know, he lost his job there with the FBI. And what he said was, he said, first of all, we need to get rid of the FBI. But he said, if we can't get rid of them, there's no support for that, at least get rid of their weapons and have them go to an area. If they got some federal laws that they need to be enforced, let them work with a local and local enforcement and decentralize some of this stuff. But that's not the message that anybody's getting. They're not looking at that and saying, yeah, you know, the FBI is out of control. No, it's only if it affects Trump that we care.
It's an ideological barking match on both sides.
Yeah.
The level of the discourse now appeals to somebody with an IQ of 80, who is in the grip of hysteria. It's really striking when you look at both sides, Trump, Biden, left and right. And if you go back 30 or 40 years and listen to what was typically said at the national level in politics, no sadism certainly back then, but the level of discourse was more adult, more reasonable. And generally speaking, they actually talked in complete sentences and formulated their position on policy. It wasn't this derision and name calling, the level of a particularly bright middle schooler.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it's degenerated into. Instead of having debates, which, of course, will never open up the debates to multiple parties or anything. But instead of having debates, we have this reality TV show where, as you point out, they have this juvenile name calling and lawfare that is happening out there and all the rest of this stuff. The whole point of this New York trial, I think, was just to bring up Trump's sordid past and air his dirty laundry. They don't have any charges there. Their chief witness, an admitted liar on the stand, and admitted that he stole money. I mean, the whole thing is a joke, but it's gotten everybody glued to this stuff. It's absolutely crazy, isn't it?
But there is an upside to it, I think, in that it's revelatory. What's going on now with these lawfare malicious persecutions of Trump, it's more than just about Trump to me. It has made people aware that what we're dealing with is the exercise of power, and whoever has it can exercise it, and there are no limits to the exercise of power, that it's arbitrary, it's capricious, it's everything that our country is not supposed to be about. Yeah. Which is, you're supposed to be given your fair day in court. The law is supposed to be applied equally to everybody and so on. And obviously that's not the case. And in a way, it's good for people on our side because I think it helps to delegitimize the authoritarian state.
Well, you know, you're right. But I think our side is not necessarily the MAGA group, because I think the MAGA people are out there. It's like, yeah, when Trump gets in, he's going to do that to them and worse.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know, again, Trump is like the Mason-Dixon line, I've called him, for the new Civil War. Because if he gets in, he's going to double down and he's going to do even worse to these people. And his people want it to happen that way, don't they?
Well, and he'll not only do it to people on the putative enemies list, you know, the left, they're going to go after people like us, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because we don't toe the party line.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Oh, these MAGA people hate me as much as they hate the leftist. I mean, I'll be up against the wall as well. That's fine. I don't care. Not changing any of this stuff. Let's talk a little bit about artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you and I have talked so much over the years about what the real goal is. And you and I had this conversation years ago about how, well, you think you're going to be allowed to have electric car? No, you're not. They're shutting down the grid. They're going to get rid of the internal combustion engines, and then they won't allow you to shut your car. As a matter of fact, your car will become a very expensive battery to serve their grid. And now we see this being imposed on people. But I think we had a different turn this week. We have now Altman, and it's also come out that some of these other companies are AI companies are out there creating their own power companies. They're going to have their own private grid to run these power hungry big processors that they have for the large language model things, right? And so they're going to have their own independent power grid. I think the feds will have their own power grid. I think they'll shut us off, but I think they're going to have their own independent power grid, and we can see this happening. And when Zero Hedge looks at it, they go, hey, an investment opportunity, you know, because right. this is going to be the next big thing. It's going to be bigger than, you know, you've made a lot of money with artificial intelligence. And of course, NVIDIA had their blowout financial report because they're selling the, you know, they're selling the picks and shovels of this new gold rush. They're selling the GPU cards, the super expensive, super fast GPU cards. And everybody was astounded at what they sold. But they said even better than that, it's the fact that these companies are now getting into their own power grid, and we're going to need to have power, except we're not going to have access to it. But they're going to get people investing in that. I mean, what do you see this? Are we going to be able to roll that part of it back? You know, the artificial intelligence, which is really fake intelligence.
I don't know. You know, I think we're going to have to decentralize and decouple. I see that as probably the only way. As long as we continue to operate within this system that's not of our creation, that is under their control, well, we're going to be subservient to their control. I wrote an article the other day that kind of dovetails with this with regard to the EVs. I've been trying to publicize the fact it's not commonly known that to use these EV fast chargers, you have to use credit cards or debit cards. And not only that, you typically have to have an app on your phone in order to be able to use them. So they're cashless. And I find that very interesting. You know, it's another step on the road toward this interlocking spider web of control by exercising control over your finances. You know, it's not just the dissipation of the anonymity that cash provides, but if they have that real-time access to your ability to buy things, they can deny you the right to buy things. Right. They can restrict when you're allowed to charge, how much you're allowed to charge, and what are you going to do about it? You know, I posted a kind of satirical thing that I pulled from the movie Idiocracy, which a lot of people listening will remember, and it opens up with a scene of the guy looking at a Carl's Jr. kiosk. You know, are you ready for your extra big ass fries? And there's no appealing this machine. It's an AI machine, you know, and you just touch the screen, and maybe if the AI behind it decides to let you pay for your big ass fries, you can have your fries. But if not, what are you going to do? Smash your fist on the screen, and then, you know, the troops come to drag you away. That's the kind of future that they've got in mind for us.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then of course, Idiocracy, I guess, didn't see the fact that it's, I'm sorry, you've already had too much of that this week, right? You've had too much meat. You can't have any more meat, because that's what they're trying to shut down. And of course, you know, just before you came on, I was talking about the fact that Visa is going hard into biometrics now. It is all about the global ID. It is all about, putting an ear tag on you. You used to do this for years during this pandemic stuff. You talked to, about, you know, putting the ear tag on like a cattle, right? You had pictures where you would do that.
I think it's apt, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and you think, okay, again, if you take them at face value, what they say, that it's urgently necessary that we transition over to electric vehicles, that as many people as possible get rid of the car that they're driving right now that has a gas engine and get an electric car. Why would they want to put obstacles in the way of that? Why would they want to, for example, a lot of older people don't have credit cards. There are people who just prefer to use cash. Mm-hmm. Why would you want to just essentially ghettoize them and keep them from getting these electric cars that are so necessary? Why would Biden slap 100% tariff on low-cost Chinese cars? To bring down the cost so that more people could afford to buy these things. After all, there's a climate crisis. It's an existential crisis, they tell us. Yet somehow it's more important to put a tariff to protect UAW workers than it is to get more EVs into circulation, which tells you really what this agenda is all about.
Yeah, yeah, it does. It does. And you know, you talked about it for the longest time. You know, with the T-shirt that you got about the sheep and the ear tags about the cattle and all this stuff. And it is. You know, they treated us like livestock, like their cattle. But now it is kind of interesting. I look at this as they're trying to morph over bird flu into cattle flu. I'm suspicious that they're going to try to, if they think that they can't inject us, I think they want to inject all of our food and get it into us that way. And then number two, have an excuse to do mass culling of cattle like they've been doing mass culling of birds in the past. Don't you find it interesting that they are checking, going through and looking at milk? They're not looking at chicken eggs. They're looking at milk from cattle. They haven't found any cattle. They found a couple of people who got pink eye, and they're trying to make that into bird flu. This is the most ridiculous thing, and yet they've already manufactured 4.8 million doses of bird flu vaccine.
I read something the other day, I'm sure you did as well, that they are working on, and may have already designed and gotten ready, a vaccine for cattle to deal with methane emissions.
In other words, the perfect checks all the boxes, right? You got climate.
Yeah, well, I mean, and implicitly in that, if cattle flatulence is the big problem, well, we've got what 7 billion odd people on this planet who are also producing flatulence. So, is it inconceivable that they will then say everybody on the planet has to be vaccinated for that, because after all, the climate crisis demands it. We've got to do something to prevent this existential crisis from metastasizing.
Yeah, we could see that coming, couldn't we? And today, before you came on, I said, look, we got statements from GlaxoSmithKline, AstraZeneca, and other vaccine companies saying, yes, we will have vaccines for climate change for humans.
Mm-hmm. And then they'll be
can't we just
say,
have Beano? You know, they wouldn't let us have ivermectin now. They're not going to let us have Beano.
It'd be funny if it weren't so frightening.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the last time they framed these shots in the context of public health, well, now they're going to notch it up a little bit and say it's an existential crisis. It's not merely a matter of stopping the spread. It's if we don't do this, you literally are a threat to humanity, to the planet, if you don't go along with being injected with whatever these drugs are.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, you and I have talked about the electric cars for a long time, and I remember we talked about the first time I talked to you, it was about crony capitalism and Elon Musk, but also, I played a clip today of all the stuff that's going on with the Cybertruck. It's unbelievable what's happening with that. People, one guy nearly had his finger taken off, and they did put carrots in and shut the thing, and it just chops the carrots off like it's a knife or something. It's amazing. That's the frunk hood lid that's there. But apart from that, we were laughing about the fact that they talked about electric cars being very quiet and that it might result in more pedestrians being hit. And so they were talking about different sounds they could come up with. I remember, I don't know if somebody came up with it or if we just talked about making them sound like the Jetsons car that sounds like a little tweeting sound.
It's embarrassing. I had a $100,000-something Mercedes electric vehicle that did that. Are we 12 years old again? You know, I mean, what grown man or woman wants to drive around in a car that's making cartoon sounds?
Can't you at least have a more economical option where you put a playing card in the spokes of the wheel?
I mean, you beat me to it. Exactly. And we were kids when we did that. We were 9 years old.
Yeah.
You know, now grown adults are doing this, and it brings us right back to theocracy. You know, the reduction of the populace to the level of middle schoolers, and not bright ones either.
Well, and of course, you know, it's desperately needed because now electric cars are twice as likely to hit pedestrians, according to researchers. They've already
supposed to kill them because of their weight.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Because of the weight, it truly is amazing. And then they had Google. They ask it questions about blinker fluid, and it's giving people ways to change your blinker fluid.
It's like your Johnson rod, right?
It's completely artificial, this intelligence, isn't it? It's amazing where this stuff is going. And people just follow along as if there's it's no big deal. You also, I saw your article about the Camaro picked up many different places.
Yeah.
Excellent article about Goodbye Camaro. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the Camaro has been canceled. This will be the final year for the car. And, of course, it's an iconic car. It is one of many cars that came out in the wake of the introduction in 1964 of the Mustang, which was one of the most successful cars in the history of the car business and created that genre of the so-called pony car, named after the Mustang being the name for a horse. And all these things proliferated because it was such a great car. It was a great concept. It was fun. It wasn't quite as big and broody as a muscle car, which appealed mostly to younger guys. This was a car that didn't necessarily have to have a V8. And could still be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And these were just very successful cars. And Camaro was a very successful car. And Firebird, which was the sister car of the Camaro, for many, many years. But now a combination of forces have made it very difficult to continue to produce these vehicles. Ford is the last one standing again. Dodge had to cancel the Challenger. again, because it just got to the point where they couldn't continue to build those cars at a price point that made them viable in the marketplace. And it's the same problem with Camaro. Base price now, I think, for the thing is about $35,000. And by the time you get up to the V8 car, now you're pushing $50,000. How many people can afford a car like that? Not many.
That's right.
Now, to GM's credit, you know, I will give them sort of a backhanded compliment. They didn't do what Dodge has done, which was to slap the Camaro name on a device, on a battery-powered contraption, and pretend that that's a Camaro. They're letting it walk off the field with some dignity intact. It's just sad to see it go.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I remember the Mustang. Boy, that really was a big deal when I was in school. And of course, I remember my best friends had, their dad had an old at the time. It was like 8 years old. The first generation of the Mustang, the really small one. And it was a convertible. And we used to, because it was old at that time, 8 years, you didn't typically keep cars for 8 years back then, right? They didn't last that long in general. But, you know, so it was a beat up car. The bottom of it was even rusted out. So if you're sitting in the back seat, you had to straddle a hole in the, and you're seeing the road going underneath you and everything. But it was a blast. It was a raw experience. I think that's what got me to where I wanted to have a small convertible roadster. So eventually, my first car was a Mustang. It was a 68 fastback Mustang. But the next one was, Triumph Spitfire, which was an adventure. But, I wanted to get something that was small and convertible like that because I had so much fun in the Mustang. And we used to do all kinds of stuff with that car. Took it everywhere. Beat that thing to death and it just kept going. But, those cars were a lot of fun. And as you point out, they were cheap. They were affordable. It could be one that was a couple of years old, could be a starter car for somebody.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in high school in the 80s, the parking lot was full of old Mustangs and old Camaros and all kinds of vehicles like that. And these are teenagers. I was one of them, you know, who could afford to have a car like that and afford to put gas in it on a part-time after-school McDonald's job.
Yeah,
you know, I and my friends all did that. Now, you know, that car is for basically affluent middle-aged and older men because affluent middle-aged men are the only ones who can afford to spend $40,000 on a car plus the insurance, which is just beyond reason at this point to try to put insurance on a car like that.
Yeah.
So they price themselves out of the market.
Yeah. Yeah. It is sad to see what's happening. And of course, when you look at insurance, it's not just the cars, it's the houses as well. I mean, look at everything. What they have done in Florida. You know, they've gone in, the insurance industry is going to make people homeless there. All these people went in and bought condos a few years ago, and now they've come in with new rules and new inspections and all this kind of stuff. These people are going to, they wound up, they might have spent, $130,000 for their condo, and they're getting a $100,000 assessment to have essentially retroactive building codes imposed upon them. And they can't, they're trapped and they can't get rid of this. I mean, it's the most outrageous thing. I don't know. I wonder if DeSantis and Republicans don't do anything about that or if they're completely captive to this big industry, the insurance industry.
Well, they're captive to it. And I think what's ultimately going to happen is people are going to do something about it.
Yeah.
With regard to car insurance, it's, I think, very close to a point at which people are going to just say, you know what? I'm done paying. Come get me. You know, per H.L. Mencken, they're going to raise the Jolly Roger. And just, it's, we live in a world now where to be a responsible person and to just try to live your life and not cause problems is to be a criminal. So why not embrace it? You know, why not just stop obeying their rules? They don't obey them. You know, they're flooding the country with people who don't have to even show ID. Just come on in. Here's a $10,000 credit card to go ahead and go shopping.
Yeah.
You know, and if that guy gets into a car without valid license and registration, runs a red light, kills somebody, what are they going to do? They're not going to do anything because they can't get any money out of them. You and I, on the other hand, if we get caught, we're not wearing our seatbelt, they'll probably pull a gun on us and hand us a piece of paper. And if we don't pay it, you can bet your bippy they're going to find a way to make us pay it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's going to happen. I mean, just look what they just did, that golfer at the tournament. Did you see that? Well, the guy who was, and they released the video. They thought it vindicated what they were doing, and it completely did. It did the opposite. It did not vindicate what they were doing. They've got traffic control cops there telling people what they could do. He was the number one ranked golfer, and so he slowly, really slowly, and you can see the picture. He's got his foot on the brake, and he's just creeping at about 2 miles an hour, and this cop turns around and runs and grabs hold of his car, and he stopped right away. But the cop lied and said that he was being drugged by this car and everything. They put him in handcuffs. They said, we're going to get him. And then they released this footage to the police department, and thinking somehow that it validated their story, it contradicted what they had said about that. It's truly amazing.
Well, they're not very bright, which is a good thing. You know, they're very authoritarian, but they're not very bright. And there's an interesting thing, too. If you get into the literature about psychopathy, you know, the upside to psychopathy is these people think they're invulnerable. They think that we're so dumb that they can fool us every single time. And that makes them arrogant, and that makes them careless, and then they get caught. And that's a very good example of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we were talking about the Google Gemini, which, you know, drew all those pictures of reimagining everybody
out of George Washington.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, reinventing our historical figures as all female, black, and or Asian. You know, those same people who put out the blinker fluid instructions, and we've also now got the godfather of AI saying that there's a consensus with all the experts, Eric, that within just a few years, AI is going to exceed human intelligence. I wonder which group of people they're looking at. Is it these highly partisan people on the left and the right that they're comparing it to? I don't know where they come up with something like that.
This isn't my area of expertise, so what I'm about to say is my opinion on it. But I feel as though when they talk about AI, all they're really talking about is a highly sophisticated computer that has highly sophisticated programming. But I don't think, I don't believe, at least I hope that it is not possible to create a machine that can truly think in the way that human beings can.
That's right.
That can evaluate external reality and form a judgment. And the judgment is filtered through empathy and compassion and reason. And it's not just a cold calculating machine, because if I'm wrong about this, we're in real trouble, and it's very scary.
Well, you know, and I had talked about this earlier this week. There's one guy who did understand what it was. And he said, I found when I try to explain this to people who don't know how artificial intelligence works, he said, I found the best analogy is just to explain it to them and say, you know, how does it answer these questions? It doesn't even know that it's being asked a question. It's just a big matching game. It looks at these different matrices and tries to find the best fit. And he goes, and that's why it can sound and sometimes be really brilliant. And then immediately afterwards, it can hallucinate and do these really strange things, because it's just building these matrices and comparing that to what you're asking it for the best fit. And that's really the way this stuff works. It's not thinking at all. It doesn't even understand the questions that you're asking it. It's just doing rough comparisons. But see, that's the thing that makes it so dangerous, because it's this matching capability that it's doing is really, I think, the core feature of how they want to use it. I think the key use of artificial intelligence is to be able to identify all these biometrics that they got on everybody, to be able to identify us very quickly, to be able to use this in a surveillance context. I think that has always been the core issue of it, especially when you look at the people who have designed and funded this thing. I think it's all about surveillance, and I think it's also about propaganda. It's a con game to get people to think that it truly can think, that it really is an expert. And look at how easy it was to fool people. I mean, if people could believe that Fauci was a scientist, I guess they could believe that these machines are thinking.
Well, I can speak to, in the context of cars, there's a lack of nuance there. And what they really want is sort of a one-size-fits-all solution for everybody that doesn't allow for the exercise of judgment in a particular situation. For example, these new cars that I test drive, they've all got what they call advanced driver assistance technologies that will do things like hit the brakes or try to jerk the car back into the lane. And like you said, you know, they're all predicated on this batch of assumptions based on the conditions that they assumed when they programmed it. And if something arises that's outside of those parameters, it may not be appropriate. It often isn't appropriate. And that's when you realize you're not really dealing with something that thinks. It's just something that is reacting within the boundaries of programming. And it might be very sophisticated programming, but it is not genuinely thinking in the way that you and I think.
That's right. That's right. I've seen that all my life. You know, I remember when I was in college and we just had these very primitive PCs, some of them we're building ourselves as kits, and we had command line interpreters. There's no graphical user interface, anything like that. And there was a program that was very effective, and it just would ask you kind of open-ended questions and give open-ended responses. And it seemed like it was thinking. I mean, it you know, it was like you were being psychoanalyzed by some kind of a counselor, and you're on the couch or something. Well, how do you feel about that? Well, tell me more about that. You know, that type of stuff. And it could be very effective. And, you know, it was laughable because we knew there was just this program that was gaming it. This is just a much more sophisticated version of that. And it's being applied to a lot of different things. I've got a question or a comment for you, okay, here on Rockfin from Michelle Obama. Thank you.
Eric. Hey, Mike.
What's that?
Yeah. Big Mike.
Yeah, exactly. That's why he's got an N at the end of it, Obama. Eric, India had a Jetsons-looking, no-frills car that looked to make cars cheap again. When will demand overwhelm and force reasonable, practical cars back? What do you think?
Well, you got to get the impediment out of the way, which is the federal government. If the federal government weren't there, of course we'd have access to these things. You know, even previous to this, the sponge rush toward electrification, most people had no idea that in other parts of the world, even in Mexico, you can get basic, simple little cars, brand new, that are made by all the major manufacturers. They just don't sell them here because they're not allowed to sell them here because the federal government won't permit them to be imported into the country because they don't meet the very latest. There's something called the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards, among other things. And then there are emission standards. And so they keep them out of this country, even to the extent, here's a good example. In New Zealand and Australia, you can buy a brand new V8 powered Toyota Land Cruiser, brand new from Toyota, for about $40,000. That vehicle is not available here. Mm. You can get diesel-powered 4Runners in those markets. These are fully modern cars, and this idea that they're somehow unsafe or that they are dirty and producing lots of pollution, it's absurd. It's just it's rent-seeking, it's capture, it's designed to increase the price of vehicles, to price most people out of the market. And unfortunately, the automakers are in collusion with this.
Yeah.
You know, they think that they can make more money by keeping the lower priced stuff out. You know, there's a reason why you can't buy a small pickup in this country anymore. The closest thing you can come to it is the Maverick, which I had a week ago and did a review of. But all the vehicles that you and I can remember from, what, 10, 15 years ago, compact sized trucks, why can't you get those anymore? They were immensely popular. They were also very inexpensive. They sold for $13,000-$14,000, brand new.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get them anymore because why? They want to upsell you. They want to sell you a $35,000 midsize truck. And by the way, those midsize trucks now, and I'm talking about the current Ford Ranger, the Chevy Colorado, the Toyota Tacoma, if you look at them dimensionally, they are as big or even bigger in some cases than the half-ton full-size trucks of the 90s and early 2000s.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's amazing how big they've gotten and how high they've gotten, you know, especially when I'm riding around in my little car. I see these cars the top of the hood or the front of the car is sometimes higher than my height, you know, and it's like, what is it? Everybody wants to drive a semi-trailer, I guess, anymore is what they...
I don't get it. You know, when I had the Maverick, it was such a nice and relieving thing to be able to go to Lowe's, like to get some. I got some, you know, block stones for a tree that we're going to plant, and I didn't have to get on a ladder to put them in the truck.
Yeah,
and I didn't have to get on the ladder to get them out of the truck. I just put them over the truck, and I'm 6'3" tall, so I'm taller than probably 95% of the adult men in this country. And these current half-ton trucks make me feel like I'm 12 years old again.
Yeah.
Because they're that big and that high. The bed wall comes up to my chest. It's crazy. It serves no functional purpose at all. It's all about this sort of codpiece strutting. Look at me. I don't understand the appeal of it at all.
That's exactly what happened to us. We went out and got we need to have a pickup truck. And let's get a cheap one at an auction. And, So they looked at it from a distance. They got there late, and my son and my wife did, and they picked up this thing, and the people were laughing when they went to pick it up. They said, "You can't drive that thing." My wife couldn't even get into it. I had a hard time getting into it. You couldn't load anything in the back, just like you're talking about. It was so high. It was a big truck, and they had jacked it up, and it was an old truck, you know, but they had jacked this thing up really high. We wound up reselling that, you know, and getting rid of it. But it is really crazy. And you know, when you look at what is happening in terms of talking about cheap cars, years ago we talked about this, and you talked about how in France they had a different, very cheap, very low power version that was only available to new drivers, you know, and I think it was, you know, for entry level. And of course we would never be allowed to have something like that. And it's a big game by putting all this safety stuff on there. It keeps the competition out, doesn't it?
Sure. Well, once again, you get back to this EV thing. There are a plethora of city EVs available from various Chinese manufacturers that are priced under $10,000. Mm-hmm. That would be ideal for people who live in the city, you know, or even for people who are a little bit outside of the city and they don't need a vehicle that has a range greater than 100 miles and they don't need a vehicle that can travel at 75 miles an hour on the freeway for a couple hundred miles at a time. What they need is just a simple A to B conveyance. Mm-hmm. Lots of people would really like to have a vehicle like that. And again, if we're facing an existential crisis because the climate is changing, why would you not want to encourage as many of those kinds of vehicles to get into circulation as possible? And the answer is because there isn't an existential crisis. It's just a boogeyman. You know, it's a MacGuffin. It's just another con designed to separate people from their money and their liberty.
Yeah, I just saw the article about the big Chinese EV company, and they had it, like you're talking about, at one around $10,000. Mm-hmm. It would only go 80 miles an hour. That was its top speed. It wasn't really super fast. And as you point out, if it is an existential threat, you would want to have those types of vehicles around. But then, of course, that's being done in a country that is allowed to add unbelievable amounts of coal-fired power plants that they don't even make an attempt to clean it up. There's no limits on that, just like there's no limits on power in India, and that's why all the manufacturing is going there. Nobody can compete with them. It's not just the fact of regulations, but you can't compete with them because they have such cheap energy. That's now become another component of the China price.
Sure, absolutely. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, we got another question here, Andromeda 1. David, what do you and Eric think of the potential of hydrogen cars? Wishing everybody a great Memorial Day weekend. What do you think about the hydrogen cars?
Well, they suffer from some of the same problems that electric cars suffer from. They're very expensive. And, you need a whole other infrastructure, I think, to get that to go. Toyota actually has one that's in production. It's called the Mirai. Mm-hmm. And it's essentially a Toyota Camry, same basic car, same basic shape and all of that. And I think its base price is something like $45,000, might even be $50,000. You pick up a Camry with a gas engine for $23,000. So it's roughly twice as expensive. And I think the unasked question is why? Why would you go through all these jump through all these hoops to replace something that works? I think we'd have to focus on the fact that they're trying to get rid of something that works. Why? Because of a fraudulent reason. This notion somehow that the 0.04% of the Earth's atmosphere is CO2, and somehow a fractional increase in that fraction is causing an existential crisis. Who buys that?
And only 3% of that 0.4% is man-made, according to them, you know? And so even from their own position, it doesn't make any sense. And I think it is essential for us to debunk that foundational lie. As long as we try to play around with that, and you know, the approach that's been taken by Toyota doing the hydrogen car and a lot of these other things is to say, okay, we'll accept your premise that we got to get rid of CO2. So how do we do that? Well, here's a new technology that's going to have a lot of flaws in it. We don't have the infrastructure to support it. It's going to be incredibly expensive. But let's play this game and pretend that we've got to stop all CO2. We've got to stop it and oppose this notion that we've got to get rid of CO2, or they're going to destroy everything. I mean, they're playing that game now with meat and with milk, as we were talking about earlier. They even did it about rice. I saw this because, you know, a lot of the poor countries in the world, they don't have the money and the infrastructure to eat meat or milk, and so they're eating rice. Well, now let's get rid of rice. You have to understand that the fundamental thing about all this environmentalism is not about CO2. It's about depopulation. These people have been about depopulation from the very beginning. The first Earth Day, I was in high school. Paul Ehrlich was out there in front with all this stuff. He was writing about the population bomb. How do we kill more people? How do we get rid of people and all this kind of stuff? From the very beginning, that's what it's about. They don't want to get rid of CO2. They want to get rid of people.
Absolutely. I think we had a very important lesson during the course of the past 4 years with regard to the pandemic. And the only way we stopped that was by challenging the underlying narrative. The only thing that stopped the masking and the vaccine was the fact that these things don't work. The disease they're talking about is, for the most part, a trivial threat to most people. It's simply absurd. You don't accept their premise. If you accept their premise and agree with their argument, well, you've lost the argument. All you're going to do at that point is quibble over how you're going to deal with this problem that doesn't really exist.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, it is, you have an article, I think, on your site about the guy, that was that, that refused to shut down his gym. And of course they arrested him in New York. Okay.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely defiant. You know, he said, look, you have to understand nobody is coming to rescue you. You're in this yourself. Raise the black flag. You know, this is the time to take a stand and not to back down. And we have to do that even when it comes to this narrative. I know people, you know, oh, you're talking about the elites want to kill everybody. That's right. And we can make that, that is the truth. And if it's the truth, we can make that case and we can make it very effectively. And we need to make that case effectively to people and to point out the lies that they have there. You know, it's all based on a bluff, isn't it? You know, just like it was with the pandemic. Same thing with the climate stuff. Oh, I'm not going to show you the data. I'm the scientist. You have to trust me and do what I say. It's always about that bluff.
It's also based on maliciousness. And I think that's something that's difficult for most people to get their heads around, because most people assume that other people are well-intended, even if they're wrong about something. Maybe they have incorrect information. Maybe their assumptions are wrong. But at the end of the day, they're trying to do the right thing. Well, that's not the case with these people.
That's right.
These people are malicious, and you have got to say no firmly to them, period.
That's right.
No discussion, just no.
The normal people can't understand how evil these people are. And that's why, you know, serial killers are successful. People like Ted Bundy. He's such a nice man. He's very intelligent. He's very attractive. And then, of course, he rapes and murders women one after the other, right? Because he uses that and people project onto others. That's what the big deal is with Trump. Everybody projects what they want him to be. I remember Harry Belafonte said that about Obama. You know, he was on the left, and towards the end of the Obama regimes, he said, who is this guy? We thought he was going to do this, this, and this, and he didn't do any of that. He said, we projected what we wanted him to be. We projected that, the left did, onto Obama. The right is doing exactly the same thing with Trump.
Sure. You know, most people want to assume the best of other people, and most people have a really tough time grappling with evil and that it does exist and that it does come in human form sometimes.
That's right. Yeah, you know, one of the things I've talked to people that I think is really an eye-opener, if you stop and think about it, I said, you know, what about ivermectin? We look at all these different things that were killing people, hospital protocols, and Trump was paying for it and giving hospitals bonuses and everything. I said, what about ivermectin? Oh, well, you know, Trump tried to tell us about ivermectin, and look at how they shut him down. It's like, come on, he's president, number one. Number two, look at what he did for ventilators. He took over the car companies and told Ford and GM, you're going to make these ventilators now. The ventilators are killing people. You know, like 90% of the people who got them died. And then same thing with remdesivir. I said he could have done that with ivermectin. At the very least, he could have said, you're not going to take away people's medical licenses or fire them as a pharmacist because they give people ivermectin. The second thing he could have done is he could have mass produced it. There was nobody owned it. So he could have mass produced that just like he mass produced ventilators or these other things, you know, the vaccines, but he chose not to do any of that. What does that tell you? You know, people need to think about that. It truly is.
Well, some of the devolutionists say, well, Trump never forced anybody to take the vaccine.
Oh, I heard that.
Which is absolutely, except, of course, everybody in the military, among others.
Yeah.
And effectively, everybody else had a bayonet shoved at their back with the choice being give up your livelihood and potentially the ability to feed your family. That's the choice that you've got to make. And there's something else, too, to get back to the sort of blind spot that a lot of Christians putatively have with regard to Trump. It's my understanding that these vaccines, in the course of their manufacture, make use of aborted fetal tissue.
That's right.
And somehow it's okay for good godly man Trump to push, you know, this concoction that involves the tissue of aborted fetuses onto people.
It's amazing. He's never seen the inside of a Bible. This guy's not a Christian.
It's probably a box. Inside of that box is probably, that's his Big Mac. That's where he keeps his Big Mac.
Yeah, that's right. He's got his golden slippers and his Trump Bible and all the rest of this stuff. I've got a clip that I play that somebody did the Ten Commandments. You remember a couple of years ago at CPAC, they had that golden Trump idol that was in sneakers.
Yes.
And stuff. They put a, you know, superimposed that with a tracking. So they're carrying around that instead of the golden calf.
You know, in my area, there's something called the Trump Store. Are you familiar with it?
Oh, yeah. We got a couple of them here. We got two of them here. I should go in and introduce myself sometime if I want to get beat up.
it's surreal. We were at one of them a couple of weeks ago, and they had a selection of images, you know, sort of like Catholic or Russian Orthodox iconography of Trump, literally with Jesus behind him or like the holy nimbus behind him and stuff. Wow. And it's serious. It's not a gag. You know, they actually take this stuff seriously.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a big part of this Reawaken America tour with Mike Flynn and all these other people. I mean, they really do milk that. And the thing is, you know, these people who are going to it, they really are they're political neophytes. If they are Christians at all, they're new to that, you know, and so they don't really understand either politics or religion, but they've kind of mixed these two things together as part of this big movement. It truly is amazing to watch all this stuff as it rolls out, but it is a very dangerous time that we're in. And I think that, we have to do what this guy at the gym did. We have to say, well, you know, they destroy my life. They destroy my life, but it's going to be destroyed if I have to live it on my knees. And I refuse to comply with any of this stuff. Raise a black flag. Do not cooperate with any of this stuff. He said, I knew I would eventually find a judge who would support the Constitution. And so now he's had all 80 charges removed, but, you know, he's still got to get his money back on it. But we have to have that kind of attitude. And we got to have that kind of attitude when it comes to the narratives about the bird flu, when it comes to the issues of you know, what they're trying to push on us with the CO2 as well. And you know, Eric, I think I've talked about this many times, how this is really the second shoe to drop from 9/11, because they had the first germ game 2 months before 9/11. Then 1 week after 9/11, they had the anthrax attack. And then 2 months later, they put out all this model legislation. As everybody's looking at this, and there's, how do we get the Congress to do anything to stop this WHO pandemic treaty and the fact that they've got control of us? I think we need to get involved at the local level. I think we need to somehow, on a state by state basis, They put out this model legislation to them in 2001. We got to find out which of those laws were put in each of our respective states and start trying to find some legislators who will pull this thing apart piece by piece. I think that's about the best thing that we could do at this point, because they're going to try to impose this from the top down. We have to take the legs off of it, where the rubber meets the road, and that's at the local and state level, I think.
I couldn't agree more. We have to take back our communities. We have to take a page from the left.
Yes.
You know, the left spent, 50, 60 years at least, working from the ground up, working from the school boards up, all the way up to the level of the federal government. And they were hugely successful at it. We can do the same. And I think we can be even more successful. You know, the advantage that we have at the local level is that these are our neighbors. These are people that we know and that we can actually have some direct interaction with. That's Whereas it's hopeless to try to do anything with a senator, two senators in a state. How many millions of people do these people allegedly represent?
That's right.
Good luck. No, unless you're Boeing or Raytheon, you're not going to get an audience, much less anything done, talking to your senator or calling an 800 number. But you might have some success talking to your neighbor down the road who's a member of the school board. Or better yet, why don't you run for the school board yourself?
Yes, I agree. A couple of quick things. Thank you on Rumble YJ72. It said beautiful dogs. We showed dogs before you came on. And on Rockfin, Michelle Obaman again. Eric, why don't they call buying a truck a mortgage? One costs twice what my dad paid for his house.
They ought to. You know, the difference is that a vehicle is a depreciating consumer appliance. It's not an asset. You know, at least when you take out a mortgage on a house, it's sort of a store of value, at least in normal times. And at the end of the day, when you finally do pay off the mortgage, well, you've actually got something that's still worth something. Mm-hmm. But by and large, when you finance a vehicle for typically 6 to 7 years now, at the end of that loan term, you've got something that's worth a fraction of what its value was when you drove it off the dealer's lot. It might still be worth 30% what you paid for it. That's what I call a bad deal.
Yeah.
A bad investment, not a good one.
And that's especially true of these super expensive electric vehicles. That's the thing. You know, we're talking about a mortgage. What is a mortgage? You know, the root of that is M-O-R-T, which in Latin is debt, right? So what you're doing, you're killing off this debt gradually, assuming that there's going to be something of value that's still there after you've killed off the debt.
Yeah.
Problem is, with a car, you have this declining asset underneath it, which is maybe dying faster than the mortgage is being killed off.
Yeah, and you know, the situation now, they've really painted themselves in a corner because they've only been able to do this this increase in the cost of the typical car by extending out the loan payments to 6-7 years and even longer in some cases with very low interest. But you know, as interest rates have gone up, now you're looking at, you know, typical car payments of $600-$700, and for some of the higher end models, $900-$1,000. It's literally a mortgage. People are paying as much on a car payment as people used to pay on their house, and it's just not sustainable.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Trump was right about one thing. It's going to be a bloodbath in the automobile industry for sure. Thank you so much for joining us, Eric Peters, ericpetersautos.com. Always great to see what you're doing. Thank you for what you're doing for freedom. I really do appreciate it.
Likewise, Dave. We're all on the same team here.
Yes.
Let me tell you, the David Knight Show, you can listen to with your ears. You can even watch it by using your eyes. In fact, if you can hear me, that means you're listening to the David Knight Show right now. Yeah, good job. And you want to know something else? You can find all the links to everywhere to watch or listen to the show at thedavidknightshow.com. That's a website.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members. Your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP, an Elite CompTIA certification partner.
VA education benefits are available to those who qualify.